Hello and welcome to another episode of the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Adrienne Lusa, and today I'm joined by Mr. Atherton Mutombwera, founder and CEO of Butano Diagnostics. Welcome, Atherton, and thank you for joining us on the ABC podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, let's introduce you properly. Atherton's startup is aimed at developing a modular configurable platform for application to diagnosis and surveillance of endemic diseases. I believe he started this journey when he completed his master's degree from the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University in South Africa. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Awesome. And so at the time, he developed a rapid diagnostic device for Ebola. And Atherton is a Mandela Rhodes Scholar. He has an undergraduate degree in pharmacy. So after his undergraduate degree, he went on to study nanoscience in nanobiomedicine and was awarded the coursework master's award in science, engineering and technology fields at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University for developing the rapid diagnostic device for Ebola. And then Atherton went on to be awarded the Weidenfeld Hoffman Trust Leader of the Year, that's a recent one, for exemplary leadership in the fields of public health, entrepreneurship and innovation. He completed an MBA at the university, the prestigious University of Oxford, as a Louis Dreyfus Weidenfeld and Hoffman Side Scholar. So we've said a lot about your education, your background, and I'm curious, Atherton, what led you on this journey? Let's start. I'm very curious about pharmacy because somehow that's a dream that never happened for me. And I'm always curious when I meet somebody who actually went on and then deviated. What led you to study pharmacy, and then how do you leave pharmacy to become a biotech entrepreneur?
You know, the pharmacy is quite interesting. I was always fascinated by medicine when I was much younger. I grew up in a house with a lot of medication in it, and you know, we used to take the medicine and mix it up and say we'd found the cure for AIDS. And at the time, we had pigeons in the house, so we'd go to the garage, and when you've got your medication, you need your medicine, you know, your drug candidate, you need to do clinical trials, right? First is animal trials. So the pigeons, the squabs really were the the trial participants, because the pigeons leave in the morning and then the squabs are left in the garage. So we'd take them down to administer the medication, but it's never really ever happened. I mean, I just couldn't. I didn't have the courage to do that, you know. But I'm trying to highlight the presence of medicine in my life and just playing around with them with my cousins and my brothers. And then when I got to complete my A-levels, the question was, what am I going to study? And, well, the first thing was I couldn't study because I grew up in Gweru. The first thing was I couldn't study in Gweru. It couldn't be Gweru, because when I was in Gweru, I was always in the shadow of my family and my brother. So I had to go to the furthest university I could find. And that was Port Elizabeth or Rhodes. So those were the two options, because they're also the furthest down the continent, you know. And well, firstly, there was the attempt to go to the States, which was not really successful because that was quite expensive. And so And so PE eventually won. Interestingly enough, I did not enroll for a B-Pharm. I enrolled for a degree in computer science. Because during my A-levels, I had this idea that I wanted to do something techie, trendy, you know. But then when I got there, I just realized that the passion for, you know, for pharmacy medication is still present. So then I switched to pharmacy, and that's how I ended up doing a B-Pharm.
So what accounted for the presence of medicine in your house? Getting that it had something to do with your brother or your family? Was there someone in the family that did pharmacy medicine?
No. Actually, my late father was HIV positive, so he was taking a lot of meds back in those days. This is the 90s. Your medication would actually fit in a purse. So,
wow.
And, you know, patient, you know, I think we did the best we could at those times, but it was a really rough journey if you're HIV positive back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the medication you had to be on, the different... it was really difficult. So eventually there'd be a lot of medication around the house. Those became my playthings. There was also hydrochloric acid in the garage, which I remember because I enjoyed playing
with
it. It was a sphagic acid. I don't know. But what I know is that if you touched it, your hands would go orange. And instead of being scared that that's what's happening, we'd be excited by that. You know? So now I look back at it and I wonder, how did I survive? How am I still alive?
Yeah, like, very interesting story. I've spoken to quite a few people who have followed this biomedical, biotech career path, like myself and like you. And funny enough, or interestingly enough, it always starts from a situation of a parent, a close one that was, you know, sick or needing that assistance, and then you take it upon yourself to make it your life's journey to find solutions. In my case, it was my mom. She was always sick of malaria, like every time. And yeah, it led me down this path. So it's quite interesting. And that you were actually looking for the cure of AIDS. Wow. It is very interesting. Well, you've taken on another beast, Ebola, and you tell us about that. Congratulations on using that as a fuel, because it can go either ways, right? You can either use it as your fuel, or you can use it as your excuse to, you know, just, you know, take the easy road or do something, you know, not so great with your life. Yeah, let's dig in a little bit further. So you did a bee farm, and then what happened to going towards nanoscience, and how did that lead to the creation of Hotano Diagnostics?
In my fourth year of pharmacy, we had to do a research in my second year, we had to do a research project, and you could pick from a list of the products you could make from, you could make a gel that had diclofenac in it. But I was fascinated by, we had just done something called liposomes in pharmaceutics. So liposomes are like lipid bags where you can load them with things. The idea is that if you put the medication in a liposome, it is, and it's encapsulated all through the body until it gets to the target and it's released.
Mm-hmm.
So fewer side effects. You know? And I was fascinated by that. And we had to pick a project. And I remember Nku was there, one of my closest friends in uni, still is. He says to me, what project are we doing? I said, oh, are we doing a project together? Because he had to be in a group, and he said, yes. And then I say, let's pick that one. And then he looks at me and he says, it hasn't been done in 4 years, you know that. I say, yes, I do. But I've got an idea. And then he says, okay, do it. You know. And then we get two other group members, and he started working on it. So the idea was benzocaine is a numbing agent that's used particularly with children when they're teething.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also used in dental procedures sometimes. I was about to make a pharmacist joke, but I'll fight that urge.
Please go ahead. Share the joke.
Oh, no. I'll fight the urge. So what ended up happening was the challenge was to put benzocaine in a gel. The idea we had, and if you put it in a gel, you should not see the particles. But benzocaine does not, its solubility in water is really not that high. So that's where you hit the problem. So the idea was liposomes or me cells, whichever it would come out with. That time we didn't realize what it would be. But essentially you add a surfactant in the solution You add so much that it forms these little bags. The hydrophilic part of the surfactant is facing the water. The hydrophobic part is inside dissolving the benzocaine. Fantastic, right? And then we do that, and it was great. I really enjoyed it. There's something inside of me that lit up when we did that. And then in fourth year, again, we had to do a project, and I chose the research elective again. We had a bit of a challenge with lecturers coming in and going for pharmaceutics. And so on one day, I just said, so the idea was we had made tablets and capsules with vitamin C in them, combined vitamin C and iron, you know, because vitamin C increases iron uptake in the gut. So the idea was, okay, so what are we doing here? We needed to find a way of determining which one was more stable. And but we didn't have a technique, and we didn't have a lecturer at the time. So I went to speak to the guys in chemistry. I went to speak to Cyprian. Cyprian is a guy who was doing his BSc in chemistry. And, you know, as we were talking, we talked about reducing agents and things like that. And then I had this idea. I'm like, okay, let's do this. Researched it, came up with a protocol, shared with the guys in the department, went to chemistry to find some friends, found some friends, combined it all. And I wanted to do the experiment myself, but my classmates refused. So it was about a quarter of the class was doing this elective. And my classmates refused. They said, if you're doing it, we're doing it together. And that was amazing, you know. I remember we started running our experiments at 6-7 in the morning in the lab, and people were coming in batches, coming working going. We finished at about 7 or 8. We had amazing results, and we won the prize for the best project. And for me, again, research. So that's how I got into research. And then, of course, when someone is telling you a story, they always tell you about the good things that happen. There's a lot of terrible things that also happen in research, but we shall not focus on those today. Today we are talking about the good things. And then when I finished my undergrad, my HOD came in and asked, and I applied for a master's in industrial pharmacy. And another one of my classmates had applied for the same master's. So my HOD came in and said, I only have one place for this master's, and I need to know who wants to get it. And then she said, but as an alternative, the guys across the floor, which is the biochemistry guys, they have a master's in nanotechnology, which is more research. And I definitely just took to that one. And then I graduated for the Master's in Nanoscience. Really great program. The structure is that in the first 10 months, you do the theory of nanotechnology, the applications in biology, chemistry, physics. And then after that, you're 14 months of focusing on your area of specialty, which was, for me, biotech. And so, and this is 2014, and you've got the Ebola outbreak raging in West Africa, and you've got the question of how, which is the similar question to COVID. The symptoms are so similar to your daily problems. How do you differentiate? And so the idea then became, let's make a lateral flow test for Ebola diagnosis. But at the core of the test, instead of using antibodies, which is what you use to pick up the Ebola virus or whatever the antigen interest is, let's use what are called aptamers. Aptamers are single-stranded DNA. The attraction for aptamers was that aptamers are much easier to make than antibodies. An honors student, a master's student in a normal lab can make them, which is very different to antibodies, which are more expensive to make. So I made my aptamers, 4 of them against the Ebola virus, determined how well they worked. Wanted to make a lateral flow test out of them, was unable to because of time constraints. Submitted the masters, but stayed with the idea of aptamers because although they're easy to make, on the other end, they're single-stranded DNA, so which means you can reliably make them, and there's no batch-to-batch variation. And then the second thing is that they are a lot more stable than antibodies because they're not proteins. And that's what the idea then became. The question was, can we develop a company that uses aptamers to make lateral flow devices for anything? And that's where that's what the focus of the MBA was for me. Use the MBA to develop a company that does that. So that's 2016, 2017.
Fantastic. And speaking of the company, so what sort of diseases have you targeted so far? Have you guys already successfully produced diagnostic tests? And to what diseases, for example?
So it turns out there's a reason why aptamer lateral flow devices aren't on the market yet. You know, it's not just an oversight of people in the field. The challenge is when you're making a lateral flow test, the end result is a sandwich on the test line. What we see as a line is actually a sandwich. And what I mean by sandwich is there's an antibody that's mobilized on the nitrocellulose.
Yes.
There's a target of interest, right? There's a target of interest. And then after that, there's another antibody.
Yes.
So that's your sandwich. But the last thing is there are gold nanoparticles attached to this detector antibody. Now, what happens is that if these gold nanoparticles are put in close proximity, then you see color. If you spread them out, you don't. So essentially, a lateral flow device is an exercise in concentrating gold nanoparticles in the presence of your antigen of interest. Right? After antibodies, you just apply them and they passively immobilize. Afterwards, you apply them and they wash away.
Okay.
So that was the technical hurdle why it hasn't been done. And so the focus for our company has been developing techniques of immobilizing aptamers on nitrocellulose. And so that has been the work that we've been doing from, well, the first piece of the work we did was do aptamers work on RT. They work, you got those beautiful dose response curves. If you increase the concept, we made an Ebola lateral flow device prototype using aptamers. If you increase the amount of Ebola you're adding in the sample, the signal becomes brighter, beautiful, beautiful. Everyone's happy, happy, happy. But the question still remains, how do you mobilize those aptamers on lateral flow device or nitrocellulose? And so that's what our focus has been. And we've got a technology that we've patented, and we are going to continue developing that technology. And we want to then use that to develop a modular configurable platform. What we mean by that is we think of the work that we do as Legos, you know the game?
Yes.
So essentially, we make the base Lego, and that's disease agnostic. So this is the base Lego. This is coming in very handy today. This is the base Lego, and it's disease agnostic, right? The Lego block is this one, and this is, if it's for COVID and you put it on, it becomes a COVID test. If it's for Ebola, it becomes an Ebola test. If it's for flu, a flu test.
Okay.
So essentially, you're making a platform that allows you to quickly develop a lateral flow device. So that's time, that's money. And to answer your question, the question you asked me was, what are the diagnostics we've made to completion? We have not yet made any diagnostics to completion. The second question that I am answering, which I asked myself, is, so what have we been doing as a company? And what we've been doing is building a platform that allows us to make lateral flow devices using aptamers. And what is the significant technical challenge we have had to overcome is the question of, how do you make a 60 base pair single-stranded nucleic acid stick on nitrocellulose? And that's the focus of our work.
Perfect. And I'm curious about your award. Butano Diagnostics won the 2019 GE European Wattman Diagnostics Competition. When I hear Wattman, I think nitrocellulose.
yeah, definitely.
Did that tell us the story behind that? What did you do, and what gave you that?
So the focus of our work is nitrocellulose, immobilizing these aptamers to nitrocellulose. So speaking to Nutan, who works with now Cytiva, formerly GE Healthcare Life Sciences, and she was helping me think through the different nitrocellulose membranes they have and how we would apply them. I was telling her about the tech we were working on, and she said, hang on, let's put the conversation we're having on hold. Have you heard about this competition? And I said, no. And then she said, you should apply. And in my mind, I said, okay. But then the thing is, she checked up with me again a week later. Did you apply? And I said, okay, I need to apply. And so I applied, and we won the competition. The idea was, essentially, the background you're looking at is that aptamers have the potential to be quite ubiquitous. And people make aptamers with the vision to use them on lateral flow devices, at least those that use them for diagnostics. Of course, others make them for therapeutics, but we're talking about lateral flow devices right now. And the idea is, can we develop a technology that enables people to do this easily? And so that is what the team at GE Healthcare Life Sciences saw. And for us, that was a game changer for our company, you know, because we won that award in October. The principal scientist and myself left for Germany to go to the GE factory to work with, hands down, the best lateral flow device expert in the world. And it was a game changer, you know, just speaking to him, seeing not just where the nitrocellulose comes from, but seeing what a manufacturing unit looks like. It was the world brought in one place for us. And it's in this... This really small village in Germany, you know, you don't expect that the world is going to come to you there, you know.
Yeah.
And so for us, that was a game changer, because that allowed us to not only build the necessary relationships with the leading experts in the field, but to actually see where our technology fits.
That's really fantastic. So, obviously, again, just to mention, in 2021, you also were listed, your company was named on the 2021 list of game changers in the Thames Valley in the UK. So, congratulations on that one. One thing I want to find out from you, we've spoken, I mean, throughout your story, there seems to be a theme, which is relationships. Which is friends, you know, mentors, colleagues, conversations. And I always find that it's interesting that most of the things that are life-changing come through strategic or just very timeous or timely relationships and conversations. But people struggle to be proactive in relationship building. Is that your experience? And what advice can you give to young up-and-coming or even established, specifically biotech entrepreneurs, but just anyone, because I believe it applies across board on networking, relationship building, because I believe that's one of the critical skills if you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that's a question that I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
I'll do a couple of thoughts that I've been having on it, but I really don't know the answer to that. In 2021, the end of 2020 to start of 2021, we wanted to make a COVID test. And technically, we had support from not just the university, Public Health England, the University of Ghana. It was fantastic. The pipeline site was there as well. Pipeline or tech-wise was built. Found a couple of investors who said, we want to invest. They asked us how much we wanted. They said, we'll give you 3 times that much. Give us a product in 6 months, and let's go public in another 6 months. And it was good, you know, you do a good job, you get investors, you get investment, you develop a test that potentially could have a massive impact in the world. And you do right by your shareholders, because everyone's going to exit at more than 20%. So that was at more than 20 times, 20x return. That's massive over a 3-year period. That's a good job, right? But we did the due diligence. We got an independent evaluation from a private company, one from the university, everyone saying thumbs up, good company. And then we needed a contract. That contract took longer because our partner was also going public. And by the time we had the contract, we go to those investors, and then they say, no, not going to invest. And then we lost that opportunity. You've been building a company to consume millions over the period of a year.
Yeah.
But that company also has maybe thousands in the bank account. Those are two very different companies. You begin to build again. You recognize the loss and you begin to build again. And it was during that time of building that the question for me was, what does success result from? I don't have the full understanding of it yet, but I've started to believe that in a way success depends on my input, the people around me's input, some of whom don't know me, and then the X factor, whatever you want to call it, karma, fate, luck, faith, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. And that's success. So I cannot control for success. I can plan as much as I want, but at the end of the day, it's more than my input that matters.
Yeah.
And I also came across a bit of work on stoicism where, you know, this particular principle was sometimes we think too much of ourselves. I also came across it in Ray Dalio's work, which was think of yourself. Think that there are 7 billion other people like you. Think of all the animals and the plants. Think of the universe. Then come back and think of yourself again. You might realize you're not as... Do you know what I mean? It's for me, that is quite
That's humbling.
Exactly, right? So this is a long, roundabout way of trying to answer the question that you asked, which is, to what extent is networking and relationship building and being proactive important?
Mm-hmm.
And as I don't know the answer to that, but one of the things I'm starting to learn is that it's very hard to make things happen. But it's easier to do your best when you're doing things.
Mm.
Then perhaps they will happen. So what I'm trying to get at is, I agree with you that network, it takes people to make things happen.
Yes.
I don't know the extent to which one can fully control for that through being proactive and networking and being, frankly, targeted about it. I'm talking to you because I want this from you and you mm-hmm. give it to me. Because sometimes that help that I'm talking about comes in a very unexpected way.
Yes.
So I think I'm now starting to waffle, but what I'm trying to get at is that I think it's important to connect with other people.
Absolutely.
Not because we want to use their skills or their network or their resource, but because mm-hmm. we are human beings and
mm-hmm.
connecting is humaning, right? If that's even a term. And then I think that we can start to create value together if we are aligned.
Yes.
That's where I stand right now. But I might disagree with my current position in a week or in a year or in 10 years. That's all I have. You know?
I think that's spot on because you don't see the value right away when you're connecting with someone. I mean, you make friends and you meet people and you don't see necessarily where the value would come. And either way, either you giving value or you receiving value. But I think I'm talking about being proactive is that, at least I'm speaking from my own perspective, as someone who leans more in the spectrum towards introversion, that I actually need to be proactive about, you know, making those connections. I almost have to make a plan around it because if you drop me in my steady state, I'm much better left alone. But like you say, a lot of things will not happen if you're just by yourself. A lot of that X factor comes when, you know, two or three are gathered, thinking about the same thing or trying to target the same thing. So this has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm so grateful that you could join us. I want to ask you one final question, which is more around what trends in biotech do you see that could have an impact on Africa or in Africa in the next few years? And I'm talking biotech, but I mean, we're seeing a lot of other trends that are having an influence on biotech. So feel free to chip in on that if you are aware. Just something for anyone who is, you know, building a career in biotech or planning something in the biotech industry to keep an eye on. What are you watching for?
I always think about it in terms of timelines.
Mm-hmm.
So in the medium term, I'm really fascinated by host responses to things.
Mm-hmm.
We've for a really long time been looking at things as and focusing on disease-causing agents. But I think there's scope for looking at the host responses to things. There's a couple of clinical trials I'm currently, I always check up on. The first is the clinical trial on host response factors for inactive, latent TB to active TB. That for me is a game changer because if within 2 years, within a year or 6 months, we can tell that this patient has latent TB, but they're going to convert to active TB. That is changing.
Yeah.
A clinical trial that's been done to look at sepsis progression in children, whereby you can tell before sepsis begins that a child with a fever is going to develop sepsis. And then that's disease agnostic, right? Sepsis is sepsis. So for me, that's quite interesting. So in the long term, I think that it's, I think it's about merging technologies. So it's about merging your proteomics, which is your host responses, as well as your genomics, which is a lot of your, you hear me slowing down because I'll explain why I slow down. And then bioinformatics. I think those three combined into one product would give a lot of powerful diagnosis. The reason why I slowed down is that at least the way that I read the trends now is that we have started to either grossly simplify diagnostics or to extremely complicate it, which I think is important on both ends. And these are really just terms that the way I think about it. And you look at the desire to do point of care inside someone's home, you know, lateral flow devices, things like that. These are increasing isothermal PCR amplification in your home.
PCR.
And things like that, that's grossly bringing it closer to home, which is very different from personalized medicine, which is more about getting it more and more complicated. And the reason why I slowed down in our speaking is I think there needs to be, I see it as a bifurcation like this. I think we need to, I think that's what the future of diagnostics looks like. But seeing now that this is going to be an audio podcast, the translation of what just happened is I just say that we were bifurcating, but we're going to meet in the middle again. You know, I think long term, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And getting a device that can do all of those, which is essentially what the Theranos concept was, right? Which is bioinformatics, your proteomics in the form of ELISA and sequencing, which is in the form of, I do not take the word planning Tuesday, but yeah, and then I think if you can throw in some bioinformatics into that, you have really good take, but those are also just terms. That's what I think.
Thank you so much. This was very, very enjoyable for me, and I'm sure it will be also for our audience. Aditon, it's been a pleasure having you on this episode of the ABC podcast. And we know that we'll be able to reach out and hear from you again when you've hit those big milestones on the way to realizing all that you have planned for Hutano Diagnostics Limited. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. This was the Africa Biotech Podcast. I'm your host, Adrienne Lusa. And I hope to have you subscribed and tell someone about this show. And we will be talking to someone just as fascinating in our next episode. Thank you so much.